The On the Air podcast is designed to provide accurate, authoritative information about the subject matter covered for educational purposes only. The information in this podcast does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. You're live with On the Air, where the airwaves are buzzing with stories of land, legacy, and lineage. I'm your host, Jamie, and today we're continuing our conversation with Dr. Thompson. Last time we got the lay of the land, now it's time to take a closer look at the real impact of conservation efforts and community-driven solutions. Let's jump back in. On the same wavelength of success, have you come across any grassroots efforts or success stories where communities have been able to secure their land? Now, you work a lot with the Gullah Geechee. Are there any happy endings there?
I'm so lucky as a... a white outsider to get to work with such an amazing people. They taught me so much. Queen Quet, the Elder Council, Rep. Simmons Jenkins, I think so highly of them because they get a very on-the-ground applied approach. And at the community level, they're trying to hold together a nation of people who have a unique language, a unique culture, a unique way of life. How do you do that when you simultaneously have some of the most valuable land in the Southeast?
Right.
The predation coming at them is 10 times what we're seeing in much of Alabama right now. So what they've managed to do out of St. Helena has been honestly, truly miraculous. I can't believe what they've managed to do. Not only have they kept most of the families on the exact same parcels they had 200 years ago, but they fought off wave after wave of aggressive developers doing things that honestly should be criminal. And yeah, there's been some losses, don't get me wrong, but the fact that a majority of the island is still controlled by Gullah Geechee and they're just across Port Royal Sound from Hilton Head, which is development on development on development, can't even get to the beach without paying a real estate resort. So their defeat of Bay Point last year was probably the biggest. It was a 6.5-year fight, and they managed to save a whole island. And now what they did is they aligned with conservation groups and bird organizations and all sorts of groups that I would not be expecting to be in the Ayers property fight and managed to get a status renewed so no giant hotel went up on this beautiful coastal island. So that one's been great. The North Florida Gullah Geechee Land Trust has started to bring people together where, hey, I gotta get into a home. Can we save this for a Gullah coming back? So there's a thoughtfulness going into how to keep a community afloat. And what they've done is honestly some of the most inspirational things I've seen. In that same vein, there are urban movements starting to take place. Jacksonville LISC and Three Rivers Legal Services has gone into the densest concentrations of Ayers property in the country, gone door knocking house to house, got titles cleared, got it public education, got new roofs on every single house. They've brought back whole neighborhoods that were thought to be demolished, that were historically Black and underserved, just 20 years ago. How they've managed to do this in such an incredible rate is it's like watching a whole side of a city come back to life. And I think we got to keep looking for these success stories because we're never going to win the larger issue if it's a lot of doom and gloom.
Yeah.
And so from the rural to the urban, I think there's a lot to be looking forward to.
Okay. Well, let's get a little personal to close us out here. Through your research, have you had any aha moments that have changed the way you see the issue in Ayers property?
There's been so many aha moments. there's been a moment we walked, my colleague J.C. Fisher and I walked into a church, and it was a historically Black church in a predominantly Black city. And it was kind of confusing at first because almost like a third of the audience was white, with lifted trucks coming down from the north part of the state. And it was the yeomen farmers up north who were driving multiple hours to come to this church to get basic education. And it's Ayers property has been historically presented as a Black community issue, Latino community issue. I'm starting to not see it this way. I can find just as much, if not more, white Ayers property in the United States by sheer raw total than anything. I mean, you go up to Appalachia, it's like every other parcel there too. Mm-hmm. what we see in the hollows of Appalachia and what we see down in the Black Belt, what we see over in the Mississippi Delta or the freedom colonies out in Texas. It's the same story over and over again across all these racial categories. It's about access to legal services, trust of the tax and law system, and an unwillingness to write wills. And so I'm not seeing it as a strictly race-based thing. It has been presented that way, but it affects all. Even upper-class people have it. Death is oftentimes unplanned. And as a result, you do see these problems. I think moving beyond a strict framework of, oh, that is this racial group's problem, is the way to go forward, because family property rights affects everybody.
So if you could see one major policy shift or community action in the next, let's say, 5 years, that would make a difference, what would it be?
One.
Putting the pen in your hand.
Picking one. I'm torn between two.
Well, give us both.
There are some new versions of the UPHPA coming out, mm-hmm. and I'm working my best Latin here. I'm not a lawyer. But the New York version that just passed this past year, I mean, the UPHPA is in 23 states now, but the New York version in particular has a provision written into it that doesn't let outside family members, companies, real estate firms, initiate sales at all. If you are not related to the family, you don't get to dictate what happens to the property. I think that's impressive, because that is one of the
sounds amazing.
That's one of the strongest pieces of family property rights I've seen.
Yeah.
And that one was by intent. And where they got the idea is my second answer. Mm-hmm. And this is so all these states have different approaches. I think the two strangest and most unique approaches in the United States is Hawaii and Puerto Rico. Hawaii still has blood law on the book, meaning you got to be related to the mother, maternal, to make claim to a piece of property. It's kind of like Native American law. But we went down to my team of trainers with the Southern Rural Development Center, went down to Puerto Rico to start working there and helping them develop resources and translate to Spanish, and especially post-Maria, trying to get things going. And partnered with a group called Victus, who does amazing work. But halfway through, they said, well, there's the United States law. Now let's do the Spanish law. And I thought they were talking about switching language. Mm. Half of the law still on the books in Puerto Rico comes from Spain. It's called the Civil Code. Mm-hmm. And there, and based on the Civil Code from Spain, corporations are not allowed to buy land from private individuals or families. There is no private. You have to go through a series of hoops and approvals, get the whole area rezoned. Mm-hmm. It's not a big island. There's only so many things you can do. But essentially, corporations cannot buy up the most valuable or what they deem the most beneficial land. That's families. And it generally stays in families as a result. And it keeps the intergenerational wealth going. I think that's a beautiful thing. So between the New York version and the really, really old way from Spain of Puerto Rico's approach, those two, I think, have given families a lot more property rights than what we see in a lot of other states.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so last question here, and I will let you go on your way. How can our listeners get involved or support the work being done to protect heirs property?
We have a movement now of people working on this issue, and it's so much more than it was 10 years ago, and I think that's a beautiful thing. We now have 600-plus extension agents across the South, so getting in touch with your local extension office, starting to develop a collaboration there if you need support, telling people there are resources available at your extension offices, particularly through HBCUs and the other 1860 land grants. I think a lot of people just don't know those resources are there that are relatively new in the last year or two. So if people have need, go to where you can get those resources. The centers I mentioned in other states, with the exception of Alabama, get in touch with them. There are resources available now, some that are very, very accessible. So we are no longer operating blind for a lot of these people saying, well, what do I do? And then you get stuck up reading dead Latin. So the first is get informed, educate others around you as you see the problem emerging. The second is working on your own family. I know that sounds kind of obvious, mm-hmm. but we were training extension agents last year only to see 12 of them realized they had it in their family.
Wow.
They were there to help others, not knowing that it was
them that needed the help.
They stood up, grabbed their phone, started calling their grandma, and ran out of it. Now, one more uplifting note to go out on here. I've gotten to work with some families and get the original deeds pulled and the vesting, all the information out of the courthouse books that go back to the 1800s. When a family gets to see their great-great-grandparents' signature,
wow,
legacy becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
I think doing your own family work, getting it ready, figuring out who in your family has needs, can be something that brings a family together rather than everyone getting into a hard disagreement over which acres should go to who. I think the unifying feature and that gesture of love where a grandfather might give away several millions of dollars worth of land to his great-grandson just to clear the title is some of the most uplifting and beautiful things I've ever seen. And so get your house in order. The best thing that we can leave to those who come behind us and our heirs is a well-planned estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
So get your house in order, know where resources are, and help those when they start to express these concerns.
Wow, that sounds like some work to be done, but some easily obtainable work. Ryan, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Thompson's research, we'll have links in the episode notes. Until next time, remember, our land is our legacy. Keep it strong, keep it in the family, and keep it tuned in to On the Air. On the Air is a product of Auburn University and the Alabama Cooperative Extension System. Support for this program is provided by the Beginning Farmers and Ranchers Development Program, project award number 2023-49400-4086 from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Any opinions, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and should not be construed to represent any official USDA or U.S. government determination or policy. More information about activities and publications related to Ayers property in Alabama can be found by visiting our website at www.aces.edu/go/Ayers property. On the Air podcast is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional counsel. If legal advice or other expert assistance is required, please seek the advice of services of competent professionals. Thanks for tuning in to On the Air. Be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share your thoughts with us. Together, we'll continue to explore the fascinating world of Ayers property, one episode at a time. Until then, keep protecting your legacy.